Indeed,
we are. Woo!
We are live, and other things.
The first episode in the year of 2026. May it last forever.
Or at least, like, until it's done. Like, if the calendar stops, that's usually, like, a bad sign for, like, civilizations. Yeah. That means something happened.
It was the best year because it was the last year.
Yeah, but whatever you were sick of, you don't got to deal with it anymore.
Yeah, that's right. It's over.
Like, you're done. That person who keeps taking your parking spot at work, they got wiped out by the comet too. Fuck them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's all done. So we're with episode 29.
Yeah,
29 episodes. Pretty good.
That is pretty crazy, actually. I know we like started doing this like with really no plan and no expectation, but you know. That's now imagine if we had been like prepared and planned and professional. It would have been amazing. Yeah. So I actually have a completely different like tactical situation. So usually I'm freezing my ass off up in my office at night. But I remembered we have like a little heater thing. So I had it cranked up and pointed in my direction. Now I'm realizing it's actually like way too hot to sit here with a blanket on. So I'm gonna try to like not sweat like a hooker in church while we're talking tonight, but
you're gonna glisten. Yeah.
Yeah, it's gonna be a little sticky and a little personal.
Enjoying a bit of brew today?
Yeah. I had exactly one can of Modelo left, so that's what we're having. But, yeah, it's okay, like Mexican beer.
Yeah. Negro Modelo is really nice. I like that a lot.
This is just some random
just regular old Modelo.
Yeah. It says it's special on there, so
especial. You
know. Mm. Yeah. Special to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was sitting and thinking, before we start, so we're actually going to have, I think for the first time in a while at least, we're going to have a next time on the bad internet trends.
Next time.
Because we actually have two games to talk about. So tonight we are going to be talking about Endless Hammer, which is basically if you have all the hammers in the world and then you get one more.
Yes.
That is what happened. So we're going to be talking about that.
But then you thought you were done, but then there was another hammer. So
exactly. And then next time we will talk about the Venusian hammer, which means by then people will have figured out some of the bugs and errors and been able to fix them. So we should be in pretty good shape. Also, we are on a like very tight timer. I'm watching my battery tick down here.
What happened?
I forgot that my iPad hadn't actually been charging when I thought it was, so...
Oh, no.
Worst case, we may have to, like, pause for a minute, and I can swap to the phone, and should have another hour and a half or so.
Okay. Or an hour. Or we'll just speed run it.
We'll just power the fuck through it.
Before we dive deep into Endless Hammer, I'll just go ahead and say that right now, it is available on the Nordic Weasel Games Discord, the Hobby Homies Discord, the Bedroom Battlefields Discord, the Dicey Guy Miniatures Painting Discord, and it's another Discord. The Rust Punks Discord.
Hey.
Right now it's only available in Discords, and I put it in the Squad Hammer group on Facebook as well.
Yeah.
Eventually I'll put it on my Substack, and I'll link my Substack, and I'm going to put everything on the Substack.
Yeah.
But the Substack isn't quite set up yet. So
it's right now you have to be in the know.
Yeah, exactly. So this is the alpha. You can
be in like five different places.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be in a specific know. You just have to be kind of generally in the know. But yeah, so you can check it out and provide some feedback. So you've been talking about it pretty regularly, but I don't think I had seen any like actual snippets except for like maybe one you showed me. And that was like way earlier. So I wasn't sure when you said you were sending it how much stuff there was going to be, but it turned out there was actually quite a lot.
I think I sent it to you like 3 days ago, like on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And even since then, I just got to get it done.
There's a value to just like getting in the zone and like grinding it out because you have it like all in your head. So it's just like.
I got no zones. I only got like scraps of time. So just wherever I got time,
I just
start hammering because I put it in docs. So no matter where I am, I can like just grab
pull out the phone.
Your computer, whatever. So I just. If it's a little inconsistent, it's probably because I didn't quite get through all of it.
Well, sometimes you run into that where, like, two parts, because they're written at two different times, they'll kind of, like, end up feeling different.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely getting, I know this isn't a secret, because you've talked about, like, kind of what the inspirations are, but I was definitely, as I was looking through it, I was definitely getting the feeling of, you know, like Final Fantasy and Suikoden and some of those things where it's very, you know, basically like JRPG, like tactical games with top-down views and very little pixel guys. It was kind of very much the vibe I was getting. I was actually thinking in my head, because like when you read a game, sometimes you'll like imagine like what your unit should look like or like what minis you want to use or something. I was kind of thinking like, I wonder if somebody makes little like paper like standees with like pixel art characters on them. That would be pretty
cool. Would be adorable.
And it's played on a grid, right? Like you are gridding it up.
Yeah. You want to be isometric. You want to have levels. Mm-hmm. You can play flat. Flat is fine.
Yeah, but I was noticing that more. Height was actually like a thing in combat and stuff. Like it actually affects things.
Yeah, the way you move, height will affect whether you can move up or down, or falling damage. And you have a jump value that tells you how much you can go up and down in your
movement. Yeah, yeah.
So you can get stuck.
That's reminding me of the what are they called? The Mercenaries games. They're like another JRPG. It was like a whole bunch of them, but yeah, nice. They had a jump factor anyway. Yeah, so what's the, pretend I'm at a convention and you have like 20 seconds to tell me why I should come play this game at your desk.
Or
at
your table. First of all, put on some deodorant.
We're free!
Yeah. Okay, why would you want to play this game has been a question I've been wondering myself. the reason I wanted to make this game is because I've always liked Final Fantasy Tactics and those kind of little games. Mm-hmm. But I like those because I wanted to play that kind of style of game as D&D. So I did like some deep diving and I figured out what it was that I first started with, which was D&D Black Box, I think it's 92. And it came like this with this adventure and a map. And it was a story. And you could just play it by yourself if you wanted to. You didn't have to role play with anybody. Yeah, so I snuck it in, like my mom wasn't looking. I snuck the box into my house. I bought it. And I would like sneak play the game. I'd like move through the little grids and I'd play through the story. And that's kind of the experience I've been wanting to capture. '92.
Yeah.
Or like one style of game. So yeah, Final Fantasy Tactics, Tactics Ogre kind of captures that because you're on the grid and you're moving around. But it adds the elements of like moving up and down. You can only move orthogonally. I can't remember. That's sideways. Right. Yeah. No diagonals. Diagonals are out.
Yeah. That's a whole different thing.
So if you want a game you can play on a tiny space that has a large impact. Because it isn't moving, then that's where the game really shines. And story. It's all about story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was noticing, I was cheating ahead a little bit looking at some of the quests and stuff. So there is like specific kind of quests and missions that you can do. There's not that many yet because it's still like, being sorted out. But yeah, it's like a specific, so one of the maps is like supposed to be like a manor house and there's a minimum number of rooms. Specific kinds of enemies you encounter in that quest. So it kind of has like, I was kind of thinking, looking at the quest, that it also feels a little bit like some of those like Warhammer quests and some of those games.
Yeah, that's right. The way I envision it playing out is like a episode, like, you know, like say you pop on the anime, it's like a fantasy one. Some isekai guy goes to a fantasy world and he has to be like an adventurer. Mm-hmm. He's got like companions and you're going around. And like, it's kind of episodic. Each one's different. I want that feeling in the game.
Oh, yeah. So could you play on, like, grid, like, floor tiles, like Warhammer Quest tiles or something?
Yeah, or I think as long as it's gridded, it's got to be fine. Yeah. Hexagons will break it. You can't play on hexagons, sorry.
Right.
So it's not going to work. I love hexagons. I think they're better, honestly, than a grid, but for this style of game, it's not going to work.
Yeah. You got to have the vibe. But also, I think there is kind of a purity in having, because you can be in four positions, like, next to a guy, right?
So that's
it limits it down a bit and it makes it easy. Like there's front side and you know, if you ever want have something that relies on that.
And everything affects the sides as well. So if you're standing, there's an enemy, like say here and you're over here, you can't attack him. But if you have allies on either side, then you can affect those allies.
Hey, so I was noticing that you make a guild, which is kind of your like selection of characters, right? So how do I get my guys?
Miniatures wise, you decide what you want to use. I have recommended 28mm on 25mm bases for 1-inch grids because I think that's the most standard, but you could definitely do a 15 or whatever. And for actually building the units, I don't know if the version you looked at has it because I've been hammering out things since Tuesday and it might not have been fleshed out at that point in time, but it is in the release.
Okay.
It tells you you're going to build one Silver Rank unit. one bronze rank unit, two copper, and four unranked. And then it'll give you a guideline. So you get reputation points to spend. And you're going to look at the schools, which will be different ability lists. So melee or shooting. And you're going to choose two of those. And then you're going to have one racial trait. So if your dude's an elf, then you're an elf. You get the elf school. If your dude's a human, like the stereotype of humans is they're versatile, right? Like humans are adaptable. They can do anything. So they don't have a school. They just choose, like they don't have their own racial trait. They choose a third school.
And schools are kind of like jobs in like Final Fantasy or something.
Yeah, kind of. It's like a choose your own job. I don't want to say that a fighter is always these things.
Yeah.
I want you to decide what a fighter is. So if you decided a fighter is a guy who's really good at melee and strength, then that's what the fighter is to you. But if you, you know, like knowledge or
speed, so you could be a barbarian or a fencer or something.
Yeah.
A guy who fights.
The ability schools are different enough, I feel, that you can kind of craft just about any class you want.
I'm also noticing that you need sheep for one of the scenarios.
Sheep? Yes, absolutely. It's essential. Where are we going to find sheep miniatures? I don't know.
That is always a good question. I always look at when we go to certain bookstores where they have like a kids section, they'll have like these. They're like figurines of farm animals, and they're really nice. They look great, but they're also like super expensive. You can probably get some like plastic sheep farm animal bags on Amazon that are full of like lead paint or something.
Yeah, as long as they fit on that 1-inch base, I think you're good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You might have to put your sheep like rearing up, like sheep rampant.
Yeah, exactly. Sheep rampant.
That way it fits.
Yeah.
And I see there are some pretty beefy character and campaign tables. I feel like I've seen a game before that had character events and campaign events, but maybe
I don't know. I think some game that people used to play or something like that, you know, used to
be popular. Like old hat. You got to move on, you know, keep with that. Now, so here's a question, because I noticed you use D66s instead of D100s. So was that just an affectation, or was there a particular reason like that you didn't need that many results on there, or what was the, do you remember?
That's basically, I'm like, what do people actually need to play? They need the map, they need some dice, they need the miniatures.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. Like, terrain is good. It's better. I'm like, but how many dice do they need? Do they really need more than D6s? And I think game, so they don't.
Kind of keep it too.
Yeah, so D66, I feel, adds enough results that it still makes up for a pretty hefty table.
Yeah, you can get a good chunk. And I noticed that a lot of the entries on the table have two numbers on them, so you still have room if you want to.
Yeah, you exactly.
can break them out more, so there's more room to work with. I was laughing a little bit too, because all the stats for the characters are like three-letter abbreviations, which feels very like PS1 like video game. So,
and I do mention in the rules that Endless Fantasy Tactics was a major inspiration for the game, and the stats are basically the same. But that's because those are just the same as JRPGs. So I don't.
Yeah, they all have, and they're kind of the basic stuff: your attack, your defense, magic. Yeah. So it gives you everything you need. And you have mana points, which I feel is very JRPG. Was that just automatically it was going to be mana points, or did you think about, have any choices about like how you were going to do magic, you know?
Yeah, I just decided I wanted to, I love spending points to do things.
Yeah. So when you were testing the game, cause I saw on, I think Blue Sky that you were testing it. how did you track like health and mana? Like, did you use dice or did you write it down or?
Yeah, I got everyone on that game to write down, like, to make their own character sheet. I said, everyone, you sit down. This is your character and your stats. Write it out and name your character. And you could create a little story if you want. Because I'm not just aiming for people who want to play, like, Final Fantasy Tactics. I'm also aiming for people who want to role play. But, you know, like, this is something a little bit quicker. But they still, like, role players always want to create a story. So,
for them.
Yeah. And then I just say, write it down. So if you spent... You know, if you have 4 MP and you spent a point, you know, then you say now you have 3 MP. If you used a potion, now you're back up to 4. Just write it down. Because I think role players like writing things down.
They often do. I suppose you could just have like a pair of like, you know, one red and one blue die or something.
Mana's definitely.
Blue. Oh, that's from Diablo.
Yeah. I didn't dictate how people should track it. I feel if it comes up enough that people, they just can't figure out how they should track it properly, then I could give a guideline, but... You know, like go with whichever one you're comfortable with. I think role players will write things down. War gamers will track with the dice.
Yeah, that's probably. I was just thinking, because you could get those like little gemstones that Magic the Gathering players use for life points. Yeah. So you get
that's
like
board red gamers blue. There.
Yeah. Board gamers like to have like tokens or stuff. So you gotta, but that's the thing. You can kind of, like you say, you can adopt it. So like,
yeah, I am thinking now, about doing tokens, but like for the alpha, I'm let people sort themselves out and see what seems best.
Yeah. And I noticed, so you mentioned there are different ranks of characters, and there is like progression, like your characters get better over time.
Yeah. Right? And there's two factors. One is playing the game will increase the stats, but you don't really decide necessarily how the stats are going to increase. Sometimes you get the choice, sometimes you don't. It just, you know, like there's an event where it increases your lowest stat. So there you go. You just get like a better at one thing that you weren't as good at. And as you increase stats, then you're eligible to increase your rank. And then once you are eligible to increase your rank, you can spend your reputation to grab a new ability or special command, as we call it.
Right. I also just want to shout out that I was looking at the injury table that you roll on when a hero defeated, and it cracks me up that you can actually have your hero like stick around as an undead for a couple of extra missions. That's really cool.
Yeah, I thought it was
or you
fun.
Can become a guardian spirit. That's really cool. Like those results won't happen very often, but that's one of those things that when it happens, it'll like people will remember that kind of stuff because that's just really fun.
Yeah, I kind of like tried to channel the essence. Like, what do we really like about 5 parsecs? It's really those random results, like things that make memorable moments. So. Without going too overboard, hopefully, I'm trying to create memorable results.
Yeah.
Or like terrible tragedies where you lose your character and you also remember that too. Goddamn, right. Killed my dude. I spent so much investment on this guy and now he's just gone.
No, exactly.
One thing I did do different though, like I was lying in bed and it occurred to me, why do we do the campaign events and the character events at the end?
I think
you kind of makes sense to do it in the beginning. So although I went with
that stuff. That way it lets you kind of set up like the vibe and the story and stuff. So you can use that to add some flavor to what you're then doing in battle. So
did you ever have that consideration? Did you decide like, or did you always know like just at the end, that's the best place?
That's one of those decisions that literally has no reason for it. Like they are there because when I was writing the original parsecs, that's just where I put it. There was never, I'm guessing subconsciously, it was probably just because in like Necromunda, there was an event tables, but like the campaign stuff, all the sort of resolution stuff happened at the end. So maybe that was just why. But it was one of those decisions where like it could have been anywhere. That's just where it is. And then once it is there, then you just like do the same thing every time. Because otherwise, if I move it, people will like complain about it. One thing I wanted to ask about is you end up using dice pools, right, for combat.
Yeah.
So one, what was the like decision to use dice pools? And two, when you were then sitting and playing, how did you kind of like what did that give you that like using like one die plus a modifier or one die under a target number or something wouldn't have done?
I think it's because.
Or was it just because counting dice is fun?
Yeah. It was like, well, I took the two options because I'd smashed Endless Fantasy Tactics into Squad Hammer. And I just looked at the two ways of doing damage. Endless does it with the dice pool, I think. Pretty sure they do. I don't know. It's been so long since I read it now. And, you know, Squad Hammer has kind of a set damage you do, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I just do one or the other, but I kind of like dice pools because I feel like it adds a little more excitement when you roll. And you got a hot dice. And then the other person rolls their defense. And then is that also hot dice? You know, and then you're done comparing the two.
It is nice to be able to just compare because you can take, you know, like 3 successes versus 1 success. That's very easy. Sometimes it can be a little, if you roll like d20s against each other. And like a few.
I tried to avoid. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, dice pools also give you kind of an expect. Like you can usually predict how many successes you're going to get. So you get kind of like an expected level that a character will. Like, if you have this many dice to attack, you will usually roll about, you know, like half that or whatever. Or a third, right? It's 5s and 6s, right?
Yeah. 4, 5, 6s, yeah. 4 successes.
Oh, I was looking at, because for defending, it's 5s and 6s. So.
Yeah, which is I skewed it to attacking over defending.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's actually nice, because a lot of the games that have, I ran into that with Starport Scum, where attack and defense uses the same number of successes, or... the same target numbers, and it can sometimes mean that it's you have to just be lucky to get through armor. It makes heavily armored characters work a little wonky. So skewing it a little bit, I think like the two Fat Lardies do that where for like armor penetration, where like the armor dice for a tank are on fives, but the penetration dice for the gun is on fours. Yeah. It just means that there's a little more chance of like punching through or doing something. Nobody likes if you're wailing it away as a nerd and you keep like doing no damage.
Yeah. But though it might happen too. I mean, you never know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, one in three is still like enough chance. Yeah. Like you can get pretty lucky.
And adding the one as a critical failure, which takes away success, kind of skewed it away from the endless system. So even though you can be pretty confident of the odds, you also know there's a good chance you're going to roll ones. So you always have a little bit of doubt. You know, is this, I'm pretty sure it's going to work. I got a lot of attack. They don't got a lot of defense, but, you know, if I'm rolling ones, like I always do.
Right.
Most people will probably say to themselves.
Yeah. And then it ends up being pretty simple because the amount of successes I get more than you is just how many hit points you lose, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So, which is,
most hit points aren't too high. So typically, you know, for, I'd say the average campaign a person might play, you won't last more than like a few combat rounds.
Yeah.
Without, you know, any kind of like intervention, healing or whatnot.
Right. Running away. Have somebody back you up. But that also keeps things like.
Yeah. Try to add drama without too much hassle. It was my
goal. Yeah. And it could be how long characters should like survive for is like super difficult because everyone has like very specific opinions on it. But like somewhere between, if you only have a couple of guys, you usually want them to be able to survive like a couple of rounds, but not, you know, you don't want them to be grinding on for eight rounds, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, if they go down the first hit, I mean, they can, but that works better if you have more characters. If you only have four, then that can get pretty rough.
Yeah.
At least if it's the expectation. Obviously, you can get really lucky if I max out my attack dice here and you can get a bunch of sixes and get criticals and you roll all one, then you're probably toast anyway. But typically, it'll take another go at least.
That's one thing we haven't really tested yet is long-term campaigns. So you mentioned in the rule book that there's quests. Those are like a single one. So you're just doing, you know, it's like a one turn, like in 5 parsecs. You're doing one encounter, then you're moving on to the next turn. But for the world books, it's going to be multiple scenarios. So you start the adventure, you roll on the campaign and the character tables, and you go into scenario one, and then you have a recovery step. Then you go into scenario two, and you keep going till you're at the end. So you might go through three scenarios, or there's possible of like, you know, 20, depending on the game. And there's going to be, you know, levels of steps in between. And I have not tested yet how deadly that will be. Chance of surviving like an entire world book is just, unfortunately, I haven't had the time to see how well
it's that's always campaign games, in the, if they break somewhere, it's always the campaign aspect, because it's so hard to gauge like if you advance too quickly, too slowly, if it's too deadly, if the loot is too generous. It's just one of those things you have to like feel out and just be ready to like go back and adjust. It's where the levers that I always ramble about come in. Like here, you have a lot of, because you have like, you can adjust the character's hit points, you can adjust the enemy's hit points, you can make the monsters a little tougher, or a little weaker, you can change, you know, you can upgrade like a couple of abilities so they're a little better. Like there's a lot of little things you can pull on to dial in the difficulty and sort of get it to where it needs to be. But sometimes it's also hard because you could be like, have a really good run, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
You just you got luck in every mission. You get all the rewards. You roll the upgrades that are like best for your character. Like it can all just like, and you just motor through like everything. You can't do anything about that. That's just, you know.
Yeah, it's just how it goes. Oh, 5 par 6 is too easy.
Yeah, well, that's the funny.
Like, you just got lucky, Bo. You just got lucky.
Yeah, sometimes it happens. Like people who roll like a squad of soulless with a hyperblaster don't say that. It's one of the funny things with like the hobby homies. Was it them that likes to really struggled with 5 leagues at first? And then they kind of, like,
I think so, yeah.
Figured, because I remember they were like, they were fighting like the rat people with the gnawlings and ran into like a whole bunch of assholes with slings and they were just getting mown down. And then after a while, they kind of figured it out and came around like, oh, okay, we get it. Like,
yeah.
But it was definitely like a speed bump in the experience for sure. So, but that's the thing, like, because you also got to get people who want it to be more difficult, and you're going to get people who want it to be. So, you know, like one other thing, I forget if I saw it in here, if you were going to have like difficulty options or not. that's always a thing to add. Like,
yeah, the ranking system should be the difficulty option. So exponentially, the difficulty should rise quite a bit. So if you're playing, say, like a bronze ranked world book, then it should be a fairly like intro kind of scenario. Like, it's going to be a little bit tough. You probably will lose like a dude or two, but it's not going to be too bad. But if you're playing, say, like a platinum ranked, you're bringing in your best dudes, but you're also facing like a lot more odds.
Yeah.
And theoretically, the odds, it should be stacking up against you.
Where, right. That's what the ghost knights come out and stuff. The death knights.
Yeah. Or for the world books, like, I'm aiming to make sure that you can actually win, sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's going to be a platinum ranked. Like, you, if you win it, it's really legendary.
Yeah. It's like those guys like that hack on the computer or something. Like,
Yeah.
Probably,
exactly.
Probably not going to happen without cheating, but maybe you do. Maybe. So, which is nice. So there's like six difficulties, right? And then, well, technically seven, because it's also unranked. Which unranked is a rank, so that's maybe like false advertising.
Yeah. Though I wouldn't say like unranked. Okay, I try to do. Okay, let's say, like the quests. Let's say the Attic Terror. I think that's what it's called, where you have to fight like a giant spider and two rats. It's called a copper ranked adventure. So I wouldn't do unranked because the goal is to take like one guy who's a little bit better than the situation.
Oh, right.
One guy who's equal to the situation, and then the rest of your guys got to be under. So
yeah.
You get one bronze rank, one copper rank, four unranked. So, you know, basically you're taking like a rookie crew for that one.
Yeah. So you got like the one dude who knows what's going on, knows which way the sword is supposed to go.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of like taking the kids out for like a trip, day trip in the kindergarten.
Yeah. And I kept those there because if you do end up with a party wipe in a, like a world book, you're not done. You could keep going. Whoever you got left in your guild, you can just recruit new recruits and build them back up again. You don't have to say it's over.
Right. So you have a little flexibility. But obviously, once you get some like more experienced characters, there's a little more like weight to that, right?
Yeah, that's right. And when you lose them, I think you would feel it more. So you invested so much time in them.
Yeah. So is the idea that is it possible for me to like lose in a book other than like lose all my characters dying? Like, is there some of them going to have like failure conditions where you can lose the quest? Like the evil.
You don't lose things. Necessarily. Like, I don't know. I'm going to be releasing the first world book pretty quick. It's going to be called Slay the Goblins. It's going to be four scenarios you're going to play through from start to finish. Mm-hmm. There's going to be like a little twist ending that maybe you wouldn't see coming if you normally watch Goblin Slayer. You might think, you know, like, I see how the story's progressing, but there's like a little bit of curve at the end. And then depending on how you complete the final scenario, tells you whether you reached victory or defeat. Mm-hmm. So you can still survive, but you did not win. And bad things are happening.
Right.
So that's where the doom clock starts advancing, which I haven't quite put into play yet. But the doom clock, the theory is it's going to be, you know, like 12.
Right.
When you hit defeats like that, or even if you got a victory but a certain thing happened, like maybe a bad guy escaped that shouldn't have, you still won the mission, but now the doom clock advances. And as it gets closer to say like 3, then you're gonna unlock a new mission. And that's gonna be the first part of your like main story. If you're watching an anime, like the first boss has appeared and then you're working your way towards the final boss.
Yeah, I was just thinking you could also have things happen, like an extra enemy shows up in a mission or something. You got to deal with, like, the lieutenant of the evil wizard or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot you could do with that.
Yeah, like, bad things can start happening, but I haven't figured out what yet.
It's right.
Still on the table. But it came from, like, a discussion we had on, like, an older podcast about talking, like, you know, the doomsday clock kind of
scenario. It's an interesting idea because it's sort of, you know, like, you can have campaigns that are, like, winnable and losable. You can have campaigns that go on literally forever. And you can kind of try to like strike a balance between the two where, you know, I know you're going to have quite a few like player races too. I don't know if they're all like done yet, or if this is just like a list of like what's going to be there.
I can't think of too many more. So I think I try to keep it like a little bit general. Like beast folk could be anything. It could be a lizard man or a cat girl or whatever. Like you build your own based on the abilities. So like in my example, I have like a winged snake person.
Right.
If you want to be a winged snake person, you could just choose certain abilities and stats, and that represents a winged snake person.
Yeah. And that also leaves it a little open because, you know, at some point you got to go find like miniatures to like go with your character. So it makes it a little more, you know, you have some flexibility with it. You can always find, you know, elves and dwarves.
Yeah, exactly.
That you can always, but then if you got to find like a dragon person, but, well, they're pretty easy. But like, yeah.
Easy is.
Some stuff that, so it's nice.
Back in the old days, it was hard to find dragon people, but now with D&D in there.
Yeah, well, D&D made them like a stand. I don't even remember what they're called there.
Dragon.
Yeah,
now, there we go.
That's what it is. Yeah, yeah, now it's like pretty readily available. So, which made it a lot nicer. And for something like this, because like when you're buying wargaming figures, you often get like either a bag or a box or something. And you don't necessarily want like 20 halflings for this. So yeah, yeah, you probably are getting like Reaper or D&D minis or things like that. You know?
Yeah, that's what I was aiming for, like the Reaper Whiz Kids crowd.
Yeah,
things like, that you can easily just like slap onto a base and put on the table.
Yeah, yeah. Or even if you have something sitting around already, mm-hmm, you know.
And standees like, would work absolutely fine. It would, it's not my preference, but there's nothing wrong with standees.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't even know if there are any of that fit. I was just getting this idea that like having pixel art characters would be really cute.
It would be super cute.
And you could have somebody like turn out yeah, like a bunch of those like pretty easily. So
yeah, I also thought about like chibis. Like, mm-hmm, you know, there's lots of like chibi dungeon exploring characters.
Yeah.
And I looked at them for a while, but I'm like, I just don't like chibis in the end. I don't hate them, but I don't love them. So
I think the idea is funnier than sitting and playing the game with them is to me. Like, they're like a cute thing. Like, I would probably get one to put on my desk, but I don't know that I would like want to play a game with them.
Yeah.
I did see they had like little chibi Warhammer guys. Those are really cute. So, and arguably, they're official Warhammer miniatures. So this should be a tournament legal.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So bring your like chibi squads. Yeah. People won't get mad at all about that. Mm-hmm. We know Warhammer players are like famously like relaxed about deviating from the canon.
And I tried to aim for like non-IP specific names. I was surprised to learn like certain things I never thought were IP are actually IP in the end.
It's especially funny thing that comes up like Dungeons and Dragons, because some things are on the open gaming license. You can just use those words, but other things are not. You always have to double check. And also you have to check like, oh, is this like accidentally the same name as like a spell in another game or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe that's okay, but you maybe don't want to. Yeah, but then like finding names for stuff is also fun. I was looking at like the names for a giant rat is easy enough, and then you have like a ghost knight. That's cool. That makes me, even without seeing the stats, that makes me like think about like, oh, okay, what is a ghost like? What is a, I can kind of imagine like what they would look like in a video game.
Yeah, you know, yeah, exactly.
And like, knight, like a skeleton knight, but then he has like a blue aura around like his bones and stuff. So he looks,
yeah, yeah, exactly.
Spooky. And that's very like anime or JRPG as well, right? Because you always had like, especially for like standard enemies that weren't like bosses, they would be called something and they have like the little sprite, and that's all you know about them. Nobody's going to tell you like what the purple three headed worm is. It's just a purple worm.
Yeah, yeah.
So you gotta like, you can come up with something for yourself. But yeah.
And the nice thing about like anime, JRPG kind of stuff is that you can just be silly if you want and serious. You can mix them both together.
Yeah, you can have a range, and it's just sort of the part of the vibe, right?
Yeah. You can do both.
Yeah.
Kind of like old Warhammer. You can do both.
Yeah, you can kind of do a little bit of everything. So, well, that's sort of the sort of capsule. It's not really a review when it's your own thing, like the capsule overview
of
Endless Hammer as it's coming together. There's quite a lot here, and you can already have a go at it. So if you are in the know, which means being on one of like five different Discords, then, and I'm confident if you drop a comment, if people are watching this, I think we're like without viewers right now.
You know, it's actually because I'm hosting this on my like personal channel. I went to put links in and they're like, no, you can't do links. We don't know who you are. I'm like, what do you mean you don't know who I am? I've had my YouTube channel forever. I've been on here forever. Like, what? Apparently I have to prove myself on this one as well. Good Lord. I can put links in.
Yeah, fuck you, YouTube. But for people who are watching this after the fact, you know, if you put a comment in the comments, then right, I'm sure you can get hooked up as well with a comment.
We'll do a sneaky link somewhere in here.
Yeah, we'll get some promotion going. Yeah. So what I had sort of thought to talk about before my battery runs out, which at 30%, we've spent 20% so far. Well, 20% in 36 minutes, that's not too bad. So we're probably
okay. Yeah.
Was mistakes that we have made when like building an army or starting a project or getting into a game, like things that you would have not done in hindsight. And I have one, and this is one of the ones that I think is probably pretty common, but it happens to me a lot until I like very consciously like stopped doing it, which is buying too little of too many things. So you end up with like one little bag of like 3 millimeter like Cold War tanks, and then a trio of 15 millimeter BMPs, and 20 orcs, and one box of 172 scale plastic Germans, and some 15 millimeter Romans. And yep. None of it adds up to any game at all, except for Squad Hammer.
Squad Hammer.
Yeah, like, so, you know, your 3 millimeter, like, Cold War Soviet infantry has to fit in the 15 millimeter BMPs. It's just a bet. So you end up spending a lot of time and effort collecting and building and maybe even painting all that stuff. And then you realize you still can't play a game with it. Like, this is no, you've basically, like, scattered yourself and ended up, like, and that obviously doesn't apply if you're just looking to paint. If you just want to paint a BMP, just buy one and paint that one. You'll be happy. You'll paint a little carrier.
You know what's funny, though? There's a WESDA game, two games. They have like their World War II and their like Cold War era one. And when you buy the box set, it's three different scales. That's you're supposed to play with it just like that.
Wow. I've seen people say that you should have like, if you have like 15 millimeter infantry, then you should use like 10 millimeter tanks or something, but it looks like shit. So I don't want to do that. yeah, that's wild.
Yeah.
I remember one time in a 140K battle, I couldn't find like my rattling snipers, and I used some like 172 scale like plastic Germans to stand in for them. And like in height wise, it was probably okay, but obviously like they look, you know, they were tiny little like spindly men.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like it's so easy to like end up with a bunch of shit that you actually can't use, or you run into where you have built like one platoon of something. Like you're building, you get into Cold War, so you do like West Germans, you build a platoon of West Germans from like QRF, and then you realize that all of your terrain is like fantasy Warhammer stuff. So you still can't play a game because now you got to like go get some stuff, some terrain going. So like lack of planning and lack of like impulse control. It makes you really, I can really demoralize it because you spend a bunch of money and you spend a bunch of time and you painted up stuff, and then you get that stretch of like, which at least for me, because I'm always more interested in the gaming than the painting part, having a long stretch where I'm working a bunch of stuff and it still doesn't add up to anything that'll go on the table, just gets really demoralizing. Then you end up like putting it away, and now you will forever just have three BMPs.
It's like the starter set trap. You bought a starter set. And what can you do with that starter set? Not much.
Yeah, especially if it's a starter set that actually doesn't add up to a game at all. Like, yeah. If you can't play anything with it, then, yeah, it can just be really, you know. Like, that was a big, I think, part of the reason why the original Warhammer kind of reached its endpoint. Because you could buy, like, 20 High Elf Spearmen, you can't play a game. Then you buy, like, 20 Archers, and you still can't play a game. And then you buy, like, 20 Cavalry, and now it's almost a game, but you still have to spend another £100 on some characters. And if you want it to not suck, you gotta have like champions and banners. So you gotta buy the codex. Right. And then it's terrible. So yeah, that was kind of that's a mistake I've made like a lot of time. Just bought inefficiently or bought spontaneously, or you know, like I remember buying some guy on my TMP had somehow, I don't know if he actually had the license or if he just said he did. But he had gotten the license to do like one set of Traveler minis. They were Vager, and he just did like five of them. It was like one little pack with five Vager in true 25 millimeter, which nobody uses for anything. No. So I bought a set, and it is, I am not exaggerating. These are literally the only true 25s I've ever owned. They fit with nothing. They were tiny next to like even a third edition Imperial Guardsman, because that was the era.
Wow.
Yeah, they were just completely useless. They're really nice. They are long gone, and I don't, you can't buy them anymore. Just a one-off thing. But like, why? What am I going to do with them? Like, I was at this dream. I was going to get like a true 25, like Grand Sierra Games army for like Star Grunt. But
okay, then,
like, that would be cool. But then I would only have five Vager. That doesn't do anything. I can make them officers, I guess. They're like lording it over the humans. You know. But yeah, so just like running into stuff where you buy stuff that you know. Or, you know. Or you end up like not liking it as much as you thought. Like you get halfway through painting dwarves and you just realize like, I don't want to paint any forking dwarves. I'm sick of beards.
Yeah.
You once ruled the realms with dice and a sword. Painted goblins till tea, Then your minis were stored. You grew up, got a job, bought a flat, wore a tie. Swapped dragons for deadlines. Your brushes went dry. Now the dishes are done and the kids are in bed. You climb to the attic to raise the undead. Crack open the paints that you swore you'd outgrown. The smell of acrylic, it feels like your home. There's grey in your beard, even more on your head. But you're splashing some colour on plastic and lead. So welcome back, General. What took you so long? Your hobby's still here. It's the place you belong. The Bedroom Battlefields Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Find it at bedroombattlefields.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, just imagine you are collecting that high elf army and you bought your spearmen and then you built them and then you painted them. And you're like, okay, I can't play a game yet. So you bought the archers and you built them and you painted them and you still can't play a game. And then you finally got the cavalry and then you got the heroes. And then you finally got your army assembled and you played it and then you're like, I don't even like this game.
Yeah, like Warhammer sucks, man. Or you realize that like you borrow a friend's army who is playing Skaven and you realize that's really fun and you want to play Skaven. So now you're this army. So that's I guess that can happen less if you are like really bought into the idea of an army. Like if you're as really into elves, maybe you're like it's a better deal. But it's also hard, especially for like an army game. You can't really like most people aren't gonna lend you their Warhammer on because they spend like months working on it. I mean, you can cut up cardboard squares. We used to do that. So I actually have. We didn't do because we haven't done any episode for the new year, so we never got to do like New Year's resolutions.
This is not the year for resolutions.
I mean, everything is terrible, but like I'm also like trying to. This sort of ends up because me and my wife have talked about, we've talked about forever that we want to like eat less red meat and maybe try being all vegetarian for any number of reasons. To anyone watching this, if you're like one of those people who get really butthurt because somebody doesn't eat hamburgers, like my email address is gofuckyourself@gmail.com. You should send all of your feedback there. But we had talked about it for so long. So, and it was not even intended. It was going to be a New Year's resolution. It's just that. But when we made the decision that, yeah, let's do this, let's like try that for like half a year or something, it happened to be like the end of December. So it wasn't meant to be a New Year's resolution. It just turned out that way. Now that's a little easier because I actually don't really like beef very much. Like we didn't eat very much when I was a kid. We mostly ate pork, but, and the kid like doesn't like beef at all. Other than like hamburgers. Yeah, he hates steak. So it's not like a huge sacrifice or anything. It's mostly just going without pork and like we're still gonna probably eat fish and some other things. But like it just worked out that it was like the decision was made at the time. It was like time to do like resolutions. So we ended up with a resolution even though I wasn't gonna make one. But my one like gaming resolution I want to do this year is I want to play games that are like free. Not necessarily $0, but like just stuff somebody made and put online. Because I used to do that all the time, partially because I didn't have money when I was younger. And once you have an internet connection, but you don't have a credit card, it doesn't matter that there's cool games out there. You can't have them anyway. And the local store couldn't order anything that I can't. I would like read on like TMP back when it was good, and I would write down like the titles of games, and then I would go to my store and they couldn't order any of them. Because there's all like English stuff. So I would just find games that people put online for free and I would play them, and like some of them were garbage, but it's like when you're a kid and you have like four Nintendo games and you rent a new game for the weekend, like that game might be garbage, but you're still gonna play it because it's the one new game. So I want to do some of that, and I want to just try some random things that are out there, and I want to use it as a way to like try something new. And I'm gonna like double up on the like teenage poverty gaming. By actually cutting out some like cardboard armies for whatever I do, because I want to do something that's black powder, or maybe Renaissance or something I haven't done before, because that seems like a New Year's thing. I'll cut out some cardboard arms and maybe I don't know. It's gonna be a whole thing. I like doing like challenges with stuff, just to see like what can you do. But yeah, so I want to play some like free games, some stuff that people just made and put online, and like nobody ever looks. Probably not even going to tell anybody about it because I kind of want to just have it to be.
yeah, exactly.
My thing. People.
Well, actually, you should tell everyone about it at the end.
Yeah.
On the podcast, of course. On the podcast, of course.
Well, I think if I play a game that I end up liking and then I'm like ready to do a different one, I think I'll talk about it at that point. Yeah. Then it's like, but yeah, I want to like, I have this idea. This is like a weird psychology thing. It's probably bullshit. But okay. I think it's probably healthy if you have both hobbies that are social in nature, either a hobby that you do with people or just a hobby that you like share with people.
Okay,
but also have something that is like just for you and you do on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So you have something that like, it doesn't involve anybody. Nobody's commenting on it. It's just something you do and you can kind of do it on your own time. And then you have some things that can like involve other people. Or you have a group you talk to about it. I think it's probably healthy to have both of those because you kind of get a little like separation. You know, there's not that like feeling that, oh, this has to be like blog worthy or something.
Yeah. No, it's, I think that kind of commitment to having to be a parasocial all the time is terrible. And you really should have things that you just do just to grow yourself and they don't matter. And if you succeed, you succeed. If you don't, you don't. You don't have to tell anybody.
No, exactly. Maybe the point wasn't to succeed. Maybe it was just to like do it. Like you spent, you sat down for an evening and played a game and it was kind of broken or you didn't understand it, but like you played a game. Like, so yeah, I want to do, that's kind of my like vibe for the next year. It's going to be, I'm kind of on like a minimalist like kick anyway. I know that's like a YouTube like hashtag kind of like, look at my minimalist kitchen. It's like a nerd in a turtleneck pouring coffee in the video or something. They all do the same shot. Because the way to be anti-consumerist is to like copy what you see people do in glossy YouTube videos.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's how you can tell you're
exactly.
Real.
Yeah. It's from the streets.
So, that's like, I want to do like more, maybe it's just like midlife crisis kind of shit, where you like think about like stuff you did, you know, back in the day and how fun it was. And maybe you can't go back because you can never be like 14 and seeing Battletech for the first time. But I think you can pull some of those things forward with you and examine like what was actually like. Sometimes it's so easy to get overloaded with like finding the perfect miniatures and the perfect rules and like, but we didn't do that. We just like sat down and like fucking played a game. Sometimes it was garbage, you know, but we still had fun. So that's a lot. Garbage fun. Yeah. So, unfortunately, I can't do it with my tabletop campaign that I'm running because we already started that and I can't like swap that around. But Advanced Dungeons and Dragons is so old that it technically counts as a free game by now, I think.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Like, I think if you stand out on the streets and yell, somebody's going to just throw a player's handbook at you.
Hey, did you ever play Battle Systems?
The D&D, like, minis games?
Yeah, yeah.
I played, because there were two of them. Maybe there were more.
Yeah, first
than
and
two.
Second. Yeah.
Yeah, and then there was a skirmish one. The one I played was a second edition one, but the rules weren't really D&D rules.
Yeah, that's what I noticed on the second edition. It's like, what?
Yeah, it had like
the vibe, but
yeah, it had the vibe, and it was kind of like a rank and slang and like fun, like Ral Partha minis in the book. That one was pretty good at the time. We didn't like it that much because it wasn't actually like like how to take like a D&D monster and put it in the game was not really like clear because it didn't use the same. Which maybe that doesn't matter. But the game was pretty okay. I recently got a very dog-eared copy of the Skirmish game, which is more closely based on D&D. And that one's kind of cute. But it's also bananas because the ground scale is pretty exact. So, like, a giant can throw a rock, like, 80 tabletop inches or something. So, like, you're not...
Wherever you are.
You're in range, man. But that one looked pretty cool because it's very, like, you can just take some characters and stuff and stat them up and you almost can just play them right out of the monster. Yeah, I was gonna, because I was thinking about doing it big, because we're playing AD&D 2nd Edition, and it's like a revival campaign, because everyone has played it before, except for one guy.
Okay.
He's new to it. So I was kind of thinking, oh, it would be cool to do, like, a year of, like, D&D and play Battle System, but I don't know if I can stand Battle System. The 2nd Edition one was cool. We just didn't play that much. I've heard the 1st Edition is closer. It's a rank and flank that is pretty D&D-ish, but I have never, like, seen that one.
Okay.
But yeah,
what's your setting for AD&D?
It is literally just the Forgotten Realms.
We
basically, it was one of those things we had talked about forever that we should do, like, I'd always said I wanted like one last like big D&D because I was kind of like sick of D&D for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we got to talking about it. I was like, okay, like if we do this, it should be like the most classic, basic, like fighters and elves and wizards and an evil quest and orcs in a cave kind of thing. Like it should be grandma's like D&D.
We're a team of drow rangers from the Underdark.
yeah,
coming up here to wreck things.
Absolutely. Kick over all the bus signs. So yeah, straight like Forgotten Realms. I even like downloaded a Forgotten Realms novel and read that, and it was terrible.
Nice. Yeah, yeah.
So because they're all garbage. But yeah, it was fun. It was a fun. I also realized halfway through reading it that I had actually, it was like the first one that ever got released. That's like from 86 or 87. And I realized I remembered it from when I was a kid. When I was a kid, I thought it was way cooler.
Yeah, yeah.
It was also like super gory. Like people got like fucking eaten and killed and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
There's some gnarly stuff in there. I remember as a
kid. When you're in junior high, that's exactly what you want.
Yeah, like, and it was very like, because there's like the character, like, there's a girl that he wants to get with and they're adventuring and it's very like chaste, like, like they're obviously trying to get a little like allure in there, but they're also marketing it to like 14 year olds. So you can't like, you know, there's no like revealed ankles or anything. But
which
yeah.
Book was it? Do you remember?
I will have to double check the title.
Hey, do you remember what the cover looks like?
Yes, but because the cover was also used on like at least one D&D video game. So it has like a cleric girl who's like riding, and there's a bunch of like skeleton dudes on horses riding and chasing her. Mm. Which is very heavily like they obviously like were trying to conjure like the Nazgul chasing Liv Tyler's character in Lord of the Rings. Except yeah, that wasn't around yet, so maybe they weren't. I don't know. Oh, wait, I'm a fucking idiot, because the movie was now, and in the book, it's the other elf that nobody remembers.
Oh.
Yeah, so, never mind.
Yep.
Nah, I don't either. In the book, it's like a different guy. They took, like, three different elves and mushed them together to make Liv Tyler in them.
As you, yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, Liv Tyler's nice. But, yeah, there was too many characters that would only be there for, like, a little bit. So yeah, forget all the ignorant hate speech I said about the art, but it has been used on other games because I think they just recycle like all of them.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of it. I can't picture the cover off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'll find it and like post it in the link to it in the comments. If people look up like a list of all the Forgotten Realms books, it's the very first one and it's part of a trilogy.
Realistically though, I mean, unless it had Drizzt, it's not really a memorable Forgotten Realms book, so.
No, well, he came around pretty, because I was looking up, like, all of the original books for the first, like, couple of years. He came around, like, pretty quickly, but I remember reading a couple of them, and at the time, it was kind of, like, uncool to read D&D novels. You were supposed to read, real fantasy, which is stupid. Like, it's not like the Warhammer novels were, like, any better, necessarily.
Me and my friends, we always read the, like, the Dragonlance and Forgotten Realms.
Yeah, I really liked Dragonlance was like a huge buy for me when I was a teenager. I did reread it later as an adult, like a couple years ago. I was like, you know what? I'm going to stop while the getting is good because it's not getting better.
Did you notice that the Wanderkin race are pretty cool?
Oh, yeah. I was kind of wondering. I was like, oh, that feels a little Dragonlance-y. So, yeah, Dragonlance is one of those things that was like a huge influence on like my ideas about fantasy. But
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about Dragonlance, but yeah, it was powerful stuff at the time.
Yeah, it just felt like it's one of those like, because it's basically like standard D&D fantasy, but it's just like different enough. Like they use steel coins because gold is like for the, you know, it's a hard world and has the draconians and stuff. It was just great shit. But yeah, sometimes like stuff you read or watch as a kid or play is like, it won't necessarily hold up. Sometimes it's better to leave it in the bed. I did reread like David Eddings stuff. That still held up. As long as you don't expect that it, like he only ever wrote one book and then he just like repeated that one with different characters.
So. Oh, yes.
They're very basic. But I had a really good time rereading those. So I was kind of like in the mood of that. It's like, you're just like flipping the page and waiting for like Sparhawk to like do something cool or say something like, threaten to brutalize some villain.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of my like that's my vibe for the new year, I guess. Just do some indie gaming, do some weird grungy like lo-fi stuff. I'm just sort of like, yeah, just to
have back to the roots.
Yeah, exactly. Go back to like when you couldn't afford. Now it's like this luxury thing. It's like they say minimalism is like a luxury lifestyle because you have to be like well off to not be able to like or to choose not to buy stuff. And you know, when you're an adult, even if you aren't making bank, because you know, writing is not like high income, but you can buy like some bags of 50 millimeter guides or something.
Yeah.
Any reasonable army you can want to do, you can do. It's just a question of not being lazy and painting it. So it's like selective thing of like, you know, we're going to like be grungy with this. I'm not throwing out like my, I do know also that I definitely want to do more historical stuff. I'm in kind of circling that anyway. Not that I will stop like writing sci-fi because I love writing sci-fi, but I think I've kind of realized that at least for right now, my tastes are just for personal gaming, not work, are like more about historical stuff now. Like I kind of just want something that I can look up in a book and see what happened or see what the people did. So at least for right now, I'm kind of like, I don't want to say I'm over sci-fi because it sounds like super dismissive or anything. I still enjoy sci-fi. I just enjoy sci-fi as a creative thing, not as a like doing thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, which maybe that's a thing. Like, I don't know. I always wonder, like, off, like, does Stephen King like read horror novels or is he like sick of it? He just reads like, you know, cozy like mystery novels or something. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Does he read it all? Maybe never reads.
Yeah. Maybe he's like, man, books are fucking trash. Or, you know,
Stephen King.
Yeah, it's like when you get like metal bands and they ask like people like what their musical personal like musical tastes are, like, you know, there's some super hardcore like black metal band and it always turns out they listen to like jazz fusion and like Polish like polka music or something.
Yeah,
so good, you know. Like you have to influences from outside or, you know, like the thing you do and the thing you enjoy are not necessarily something. Maybe it's just becomes too much like work.
Like, I'm not that into bikes. I like bikes a lot, bicycles especially. But, like, some people who come in are super keen.
Yeah.
Like, getting, like the nitty gritty. I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about, buddy. I just fix them.
Yeah. So sometimes you just got to listen to it. We would get that a lot when I worked at the phone company because some people are like phone nerds.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just here to get you to, like, so you can go home and push buttons and not call it back. But, you know, so you got to play along and you got to be nice. You know,
yeah,
because it's at least easy to deal with a dude who's like happy to be there.
Yeah, I love non-keen customers. The less people are into bikes, the more I like them.
Yeah.
The like, customers.
The ideal customer just wants something for their daughter.
Yeah, I just want to be able to ride really far. Perfect. I got good bikes for you.
This Come one on. Has wheels. Let's try that one.
Did I show you these? I feel like it's been forever since I painted because I've been writing so much.
Mm-hmm.
But I got some GHQ painted.
Oh,
I do love GHQ. I love them so much.
Yeah. Oh, look at those little boys.
But I'm making them into not fantasy, Battletech.
Yeah.
These are all Italian vehicles and dudes. It's pretty exciting. Well,
they're a good pick because they are like, they aren't so immediately recognizable. Like you can't really take like a Tiger Tank and turn it into a sci-fi vehicle because everyone can tell like what it started as. So I was going to say like that little handful, since it is GHQ, that's like $100 too.
Whole pack would be $20 when I bought it.
Yeah.
It was like a sample. Boys are, who knows what it's like now?
Yeah, those boys are expensive. But, you know, they do look nice. Like, I know people have, there's always the joke that, like, you could take a really nice photo of a GHQ Mini that was painted, and people would think it was 15 millimeter. And that's probably true. Like, some of those.
It is insane.
The detail is, like, banana. And I don't even think they're, like, digitally sculpted or anything. That shit is by hand.
You know,
like they're still doing it. Maybe nowadays, some high tech stuff. But.
Yeah, that could be. It's I don't know. If it wasn't for the thin barrels, you know, they'd just be perfect. I mean, it's scale appropriate to have thinner barrels, but
yeah,
it just bends so much.
That's why I even when I was doing 6mm, I didn't buy GHQ infantry because they're just like so spindly. Like even like casting them, they were so skinny and spindly that even like casting them was causing problems. Like
yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, they were just flames and
you these guys are just like one chunk of dude. Like,
yeah.
Well, there's four guys, but like they're just one strip and they're all together and they work out well. And that's about it for GHQ infantry.
Yeah.
If they're not all clumped together, then they're not going to work.
I like the old Ground Zero games, like Dirt Side Infantry, because they were just like little metal blobs with a rifle. You can't really
Them
anything. They were perfect. So,
yeah, I got tons of like sci fi infantry, so I'll just use those for the most part. But
yeah,
the gun crew, I thought they work. So,
Yeah, and it's hard to find sci-fi like artillery crews or stuff like that. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, for some reason.
They just, not. Yeah.
They just hauling around guns to... on wheels in the future for some reason.
Yeah. Actually, I think the only ones I remember were Ground Zero games, but they were like different like, missiles.
I kind of want to see like power armor now with like a wheelbarrow with a gun in the front.
Yeah. I was wanting to see like an African style like technical, like the Toyota truck with a machine gun, but like two space marines like hanging out of the like squeezed into the cabin of the Toyota.
Yeah, that's right.
One standing on the back, but he's so heavy he like lifts it up.
Yeah.
So that would be pretty good. There was one dude who I don't think it was White Dwarf. It was maybe on their website or something back in the day who had done up, it was like a third edition space marine army, but they're done up in like camouflage and with like battles like scarring and like dents in the armor, and it looked really cool. But yeah, it's one of those that you can only like, nobody ever does, even though mm-hmm. you totally should. So what you should do then is do like an Imperial Guard army and do all of them in like bright like red and blue like colors.
I did like the old Imperial Guard that had like the zebra outfits. And like
yeah, you got some like crazy ones. Because
the 80s sunglasses with the big flash.
Yeah, I guess they're nicknamed like the Gray Guard because the official look was just like gray plastic or gray jackets and stuff. But yeah, you could do them. And I remember they had like the White Dwarf articles with the different like rhinos and predator tanks and stuff. And they would have like camo schemes on them and stuff. Mm-hmm. Really cool. So yeah, we need more of that stuff. What we also need is more battery, because I am out. But we're also, like, at the hour mark, actually.
Yeah. We are so good to go. We're here to say we will be back again on the day is at the 26th. There we go.
Yeah.
January 26th is the day of Venus Hammer.
Yes. So we'll talk a little bit about Venus Hammer, and we will probably, because that won't be super long, so we'll probably have a backup topic as well. We'll talk about some... We haven't talked about painting in a while, so maybe we should do something.
Yeah, maybe I'll get some painting done finally.
So maybe I'll have some cardboard that I won't tell anyone about.
Good.
Maybe I'll if I manage to get some stuff cut out and set up, my schedule is so crazy this month, I might actually like show off. Maybe we'd have a $0. I saw what is that channel called? They do historical wargaming reviews and stuff. What are they called? I don't remember now, but
quite a few.
Yeah, it's one of the big ones. But they were doing a thing. They had gotten a cooperation with a graphic designer, and I think the guy who did like Fistful of Tau sort of.
Okay.
So they're basically doing an intro set to get you into World War II miniatures, and it came. Mm. They got a guy to basically do little sheets of like tanks and troops and stuff top down that you could cut out and use as so you could mount them on cardboard to make them just basically like counters. And then
this is very familiar.
I'll remember as soon as we log off. And they had gotten the Fistful of Tau guys to do a free version with just the stats for to play that battle or those battles. And then it would have some like little scenarios. So it was basically this whole package you could download, and all you had to do was print it out. And you could get into try World War II gaming, miniatures gaming, without like buying anything, without painting anything. So it's like an intro kind of deal. So that was really cool. And there definitely needs to be more stuff like that. So
yeah, so much work, but yeah, if you get it done.
Yeah, it was just cool to see something that's like not commercial. You know, and I realize that's silly because I do commercial stuff, but like not everything has to be like that. Like,
yeah,
I think. I don't know. I'm one beer in and I'm about to get married, so we need.
Hey, if it wasn't for free people or free work, then corporations would have nothing to rip off. So, you know.
That is true. Do your part for the machine.
Yeah, depends that's right.
On you.
They need to take your hard work and make money.
So, all right, folks, that is all we have. Perfect. As always, if you have comments, throw them in the comments because that's where comments go. It'll be down there. Under my blanket. Get right in there. It's pretty hot and steamy down there. And we will see you next time.
Yes, absolutely. Take care. Bye.
This episode of Bad Internet Friends was streamed live on YouTube and Twitch. There is a North American-friendly live stream every second Wednesday of the month, and a European-friendly live stream every fourth Monday of the month.